A few weeks ago, I was over at Unger's one evening. Carol was out of town, so I stopped by just to fellowship with Chuck from time to time. I like to do that. He's an old buddy of mine, and we were sitting there talking, and of course, he's an avid reader. He reads at least 100 books a year, and so whenever we're together, why, he kind of catches me up on the latest things he's been reading, and from time to time, he sends me a little book report on it. He asked me if I'd read this, or showed me a book. I think it was called The Image Makers. It's a Madison Avenue type expose or something. And we got to talking about that, and he, just out of the blue, he says, say, by the way, do you know what your image is? I said, what do you mean? He says, well, do you know what your image is with the staff? I said, I don't have any clue what it is. He said, would you like to know? And I said, I'm not sure whether I would or not. And he says, why? I says, why, can you tell me? And he says, yeah, I can tell you. So I sat there and pondered whether I should really ask him or not, and so finally I did. And so he told me. And he said, there are three things that the staff, how they see you. And I'm going to tell you what those three things are and see if they jibe with your Mayhall image. He says, first of all, you have the image of running a tight ship. I said, oh, is that right? He says, yeah. I said, when you talk to people about that, have you ever asked any of them, what is their definition of a tight ship? He says, you know, I never have done that. I said, well, I'd be interested to know what a definition of a tight ship is. He said, the second thing is, you have an overemphasis on statistics. Very interesting. So I'm going to work on that one this morning. I'm not going to give you any statistics. The third one is that you're hard to get to know. And that one, of course, hit right straight to my heart. The running a tight ship doesn't bother me because I looked it up in Webster's Dictionary and there's no definition. So, you know, so I can interpret that any way I want to. Well, that's the way I was taking it, Bob. So, but I do believe in accountability and responsibility. I believe in hard work, and I believe in knowing where we're going. And if that means running a tight ship, you know, why, so be it. I do use statistics. I think they are valuable, but they're a long way from being everything. Hard to get to know. That was an interesting one. Chuck and I talked about that one for quite some time. And I suppose in a certain sense that may be true with some people. However, I did learn a number of years ago that I have a certain capacity in the development of deep relationships, that I just can't be everybody's buddy. And that I have probably a very limited capacity, in fact, as far as the number of people that I can really get close to and handle it, and, you know, without coming unglued on it. So that may be part of what this image is. But I thought you'd be interested to know what your image is of me. What I'd really like to do this morning is kind of give you a State of the Union address, or a subtitle would be Why We Are, Where We Are, Why We Are, Where We Are, and How We Got There. At the ILT meeting in last month, we, of course, dealt with a few personnel needs, and I was very much aware of what we were facing, and so I had done a little thinking about it. And there are some very significant and high-profile people that are being asked for overseas slots. There's about three country leaders that they need, and there are about two or maybe three other slots that are that caliber of individual that need filling overseas. So they're asking for five or six people of that level. And I, in my mind, just to help clarify things for me, I sort of think as a country leader and a state director as being about the equivalent type of bird that we're looking for. And so as I thought about that and came to grips with it, I began to think of, all right, why is it? Or how can we meet those needs? Can we put anyone up? And we had quite a lengthy discussion about it prior to the ILT meeting at the RD get-together in March. And some things filtered through from that discussion around the table with the RDs that really put it in perspective for me. And I'd like to share that with you just to give you an idea of where I think we are and come out of that at the tail end with where some of our needs are, where some of our concerns are. But to me, we are making progress on all fronts. And from that standpoint, I'm very encouraged. The United States Navigator Ministry in the last 24 months has gone through some great trauma. And you don't go through the kind of trauma that we have gone through without it having some effects, some pretty dramatic effects. The kind of things that I'm talking about, Lauren referred to Skip, of course, and my replacing him, and that just in itself has caused some ripples to go out among the staff, not only here, but overseas as well. Then also in the last 24 months, we have had a change in the RD level. Three of six RDs have changed. And that has caused some upheavals and some setbacks as a result. Plus, in addition to that, we pulled Sheffield out of the Midwest. It wasn't exactly a change in RDs, but it was a change in leadership, which is the type of thing I'm talking about. In addition to that, we've had a significant number of changes just in the last 24 months and yet to come in the state director level. For instance, I look at the California situation, and a year ago, I think that's right, a year ago, maybe a little over a year ago, we had five what they call area directors in California. By next fall, only one of those five will still be in the job that he was in. Well, now that is quite an upheaval of a turnover of leadership. Then we've had to come to grips with this thing up in the Northwest with Chuck Hunt and what happened there. And that really sent ripples through the staff. I could tell you story after story I've heard of the reaction of certain, particularly younger staff, contact staff, to that one. Most of it good. I mean, as far as how it helped them in their own lives and their own commitment to their marriage and so forth. So all those things have caused us to have to pull harder and do some regrouping and rethinking, and it has caused setbacks. There's just no question about that. It has caused setbacks. And I think what it indicates to me is that we need to stabilize the work in the U.S. We need to make as few changes in leadership in the next year or two as possible. We need to leave you guys right where you are and let you get the job done, the same at the RD level. Now, we are going to have to make some changes, but hopefully every one of those will be strategic changes. They will not be done carelessly. They will be done thoughtfully and prayerfully and in accordance with what is best for the directions that we're headed in the U.S. Now, that's kind of the tough side of the coin. That's the thing that we don't like to talk about or look too hard at, but it's happened, and it has caused us to be partly in the situation that we're in today. The good side of the coin is that since 1970 in the United States, we've sent overseas 12 country leaders who are now functioning, men who are now functioning as country leaders. And if we could only have about three or four of those guys back, we'd be in Fat City in the United States. But that's not possible. We're glad they're where they are. They're making a significant contribution. But it has taken its toll as far as our leadership situation in the U.S. is concerned. Now, in addition to those 12, we've sent another six guys who are well-qualified and experienced men that we here in this group would call staff trainers. I mean, they know what they're doing, and they have been sent into situations where they can do that type of thing. Two or three of those guys could probably be state directors if they were here in the United States. So that's 18 people that we've sent who are that country leader quality or the equivalent. And you add that to the picture of some of the trauma that we've gone through in addition to that in the U.S. in the last 24 months, and you know, you could come up with a pretty dim view of things. But I take just the opposite view. I am encouraged. I'm excited about what God is doing. I really believe the ministry is tracking in the grassroots. I am greatly encouraged by this conference. I haven't read your evaluations yet, but I've talked to enough of you to realize that the Lord has really met with us here this week, and that it's another step in the right direction of developing ourselves and putting us more on track of where we need to go. So I'm encouraged. And as Lauren was sharing with us, the world is out there to be reached. And I think we are raising up the people to make a significant contribution in that arena. So I'm just giantly excited. I am happy in my job. I am turned on by it. I have not lost very much sleep at night. But I do have some concerns, and I think we've got some needs. But these are the types of things that we can get at and we can work on. And that's one of the things that encourages me. These are not things that are impossible hurdles that we can't get over, because we can do something about them, and in fact, we are already taking steps to do something about them. The other day, I was sitting in my study, and after I'd had some time in the Word, and I just got to thinking, well, now, what are the most significant needs and concerns that we have in the United States ministry work? And so I took out my journal, and I jotted down seven of them that came to my mind. These are not necessarily in any order of priority, but they are the things that, just giving a few minutes thought to it, are the things that are uppermost on my mind these days. A fifth RD for the Western region. Now, as you know from the staff letter that I sent out a couple of months ago, Jerry and Mary White are moving to the Northwest to take over the reins of what we're now are going to call the Pacific region. It's all the West Coast and clear out to Okinawa and so forth. And so that part that is left of what was the old Western region and the Southwest region, we are now amalgamating and making that into the new Western region. Only we'll just call it the Western region. We won't call it the new Western region. I'm not sure that people would appreciate that. And we've asked Sheffield to take that temporarily, and that's a 1 to 2 year assignment, and we are really praying that the Lord will give us direction and timing on the decision of who should be the RD to take that Western region. And I'd appreciate your prayer on this, that the Lord will lead us to the right man and that it will be God's timing on it. The second thing that is a concern or need that I feel we have is just advancing our missionary program, of doing everything we can to step it up a bit. And Lauren, of course, referred to this some. There are a number of factors that go into making this a concern, and I've talked to some of you about various ones of you about various parts of it. But we are taking steps in the direction, I think, of shoring up our missions program and And we are going to continue to make progress in these areas. For instance, our Missionary Associates program, to me, is getting more exciting by the day. And if you haven't talked to Bill Threlkeld about that since you've been here, you ought to bend his ear for just a couple of minutes, although it'll be hard to limit him to that when he gets talking about Missionary Associates. I have been praying very diligently about this, and I personally am asking the Lord that by the end of 1979, calendar year 1979, we will have 50 Missionary Associates overseas, that they will actually be on the field. And in the next 5 years, that it will be in the hundreds. And that is very much within the realm of possibility. The primary holdup that we have right now is not the people to send, but it's the jobs to send them to. And one of the things, of course, that Bill has discovered since he's gotten into this, that there is no central file on any computer where all of those kind of job slots are available. They're here and there, and sometimes they're not even in the United States. We don't even know about them over here. And so one of the things that Bill is going to be doing is traveling some overseas, but also to find those job slots, but also our staff overseas, we are encouraging to send us information on that and to find places for Missionary Associates to fit in. And if you hear of places, write to Bill and let him know about anything that you may hear via the grapevine or through a university program of some kind or a job slot with a corporation overseas. Our IT program, from some standpoints, our IT program is the most successful aspect of our missionary program, and it is exciting. I had Gene Demler do some research for me, and McGilchrist put some things together, too, on the finances. But let me just give you a little synopsis of the IT program. This is just Americans. This doesn't count other nationalities. From 1966 to 1974, that's an eight-year period, 38 ITs went to Pan, while 15 went to EMMA. The tide has now turned from 1974 to 78. Four-year period, 34 went to Pan, while 34 went to Pan, and 46 went to EMMA. Just those numbers, regardless of where they went, to me is very encouraging. Gene says that in evaluating the IT retention rate, you need to subtract from the total the current ITs and those in transit from overseas. This would leave 46 ITs. That have been sent and who have come back. That's what he's after. Okay. That does not count the ones who are now overseas or who are coming back in transit. We've sent 46 and who have returned. Of the 46, 24 are still on the staff. That's 52%. Eight of those are representatives, 10 are contact staff, and 6 are intern or associate staff. 5 of the first 6 ITs sent out are now ARs. It's interesting to note that all ITs who are now representatives, that is 8, are overseas. That is rather interesting. And 50% of the ITs who are now contact staff are overseas, which is also rather an interesting statistic. That's not a statistic. That's an analysis. That's not a statistic. That's an analysis. And besides, this is Denler's. Quiet. One interesting financial figure, if I can find it here. Yeah. The average IT monthly budget is $540. The average AR contact staff missionary budget is $2,000, $2,038 to be exact. So you can read that and do your own calculations and come up with your own statistics. Donald McGilchrist sent a letter out to some former ITs and also some receiving supervisors just to get their comments on the value of being an IT and the value of having an IT. Let me just read you two or three of them. One guy who was an IT says, "It has allowed me to experience God's faithfulness, stimulated and developed me as a person, helped me to discover my strengths and weaknesses. It's an excellent opportunity to invest in getting wisdom and understanding," Proverbs 16:16. Another guy, "The lessons which I learned included realizing what I was cut out, included realizing that I was cut out to be a missionary, going deeper in my walk with God, broadening my vision, getting to know myself much better, learning more of the attitude of a servant, learning to work as a team." A couple of statements from country leaders who have had ITs working in their country. One guy says, "It builds bridges from regular staff to the student world. Very effective evangelism program. Recruits the right kind and caliber of future staff for ministries at home and abroad. I cannot endorse this program too highly." One guy says, "The contribution made by ITs, although not painless, is inestimable." Very honest. ITs have lifted a tremendous load. They've made exceptional progress in the language and have all been effective in the language. Their contribution is priceless and absolutely essential to the accomplishment of our objectives. They themselves gain the opportunity for more contact and interaction with representatives than they would have at home. So those are just some statements. So we're excited about what's happening in the IT program. I would just like to see us step it up a bit and send more. We are doing a study on returning missionaries. I think most of you are aware that we're researching some of the reasons behind why certain missionaries have returned, so that we will know more about our whole sending process. We have also now established what we call a U.S. Missions Council, which is just another step involved in the selection of missionary candidates. And we're kind of feeling our way into that. We don't have all the parameters set on it yet, but it is going to be a helpful tool that will enable us to just do a better job of sending. Hopefully in October, the U.S. RDs will be sitting down around a table with the EMMA RDs to discuss our whole missions program. What are the problems? How can we resolve these? What are our mutual needs on both sides of the ocean? And how can the U.S. contribute toward meeting some of these needs? How can the overseas leadership contribute toward meeting some of these needs? And just coming to an understanding of one another. And hopefully that will take place the middle part of October. I have asked all of the U.S. RDs to get overseas on a fairly extensive trip at least once every 3 years. Bob Lewis will be going to Europe this next month, or the end of this month, actually. Chef took a quick trip to Europe last month and will be going out to Southeast Asia later this summer for about 2 to 3 weeks. Jerry White just was throughout Northeast Asia for a brief trip earlier this year, and Ray and Terry are beginning to negotiate on a trip for them. And I think the exposure for them overseas, plus interacting with the people over there, will just enhance the relationships and enable us to do a better job. So these are some of the things that we're doing to further develop our missions program. Any questions on that, rather than coming back to it later? Yes?
How much do we know about the ITs that have not gone on staff after they return?
That was a question I had when I saw these statistics, and I haven't had a chance to ask it. But I'm sure that we've got the data. But I do not know the answer.
Are we coming back with any kind of promotional brochure or information on, like, the IT? Associates program that we could put in the hands of potential people?
I don't know, Bill. Have we thought about that, or do we need to at this point?
Well, the concept paper is just describing it. It's
yeah.
Because our, when you really analyze it, the limited base we're recruiting from are already our disciple makers.
Yeah.
So that's.
I think right now you would say that we've got more people than we actually can handle anyway, as far as being able to match them to a job.
Yeah, we have about 30 who are praying for a job now.
Yeah.
Six that are currently on the field.
Yeah. So if and when we need that, we can certainly do it, yeah.
I have the paper already printed up that explains this in some detail. So if you'd like some copies of that, just let me know and I'll be glad to send it.
Yeah. We've got to keep in mind that the type of people that we want to send with this Missionary Associates program is a very select bunch. We are pretty hard-nosed on the type of people that we will qualify from the navigator standpoint. Now, it's a whole other thing to qualify them for a job, but it's the qualifications that we have established for that type of individual are pretty high because we want them to contribute when they get over there. And one of the qualifications is that they have been successful in the ministry they've been involved in here in the States. Yeah, anything else? Okay. Another thing is just developing the training of our staff and potential staff, of keeping moving out in new areas of learning how to do this more effectively. And I think we're making some inroads here. We're beginning to work on some things. I'm sure there's a lot of new things that we have not done or tried yet that we could be doing. Another thing is to develop a clarity of direction for our ministries with the blacks, with the women, and with laymen. Just recently, I was down in Atlanta with Noel and Karen, spent some time with them, and then we attended one day of the National Black Evangelical Association Convention. And it was quite an educational experience for me. Sani had been invited to this deal by Reuben Connors, Dr. Connors, who is the president of this organization, the NBEA. And he couldn't go, and so he asked me, do you think we should do anything with this? And I said, well, if they'd invite me, I'd like to go. So he wrote back, and they invited me to come and not only attend the convention, but also to have lunch with their board of directors the afternoon before the convention started. And they wanted to award the Navigators and InterVarsity Christian Fellowship and Campus Crusade for Christ with a little award of appreciation for our contribution to the black ministry in the United States. I think those of you who know anything about our black ministry in the United States know that they'd have to hunt a long time before they could come up with how they would speak to that appreciation. We have done a little bit, but you know, when you think of a black ministry, we just haven't even scratched the surface. We've got some terrific people. I had just hours and hours with Rich and Jane Berry, and it was just a delightful time. And I got some insights that I'd never realized before, and a greater appreciation for where they are and what some of their needs are. And I want to see us figure out what the next step is. So we're planning this summer a get-together with Rich and with Bob Price at the University of Illinois, and Gene Burrell from Washington, D.C., and let them bring one guy with them to that meeting, and two or three of us, just to sit down and for a couple of days and talk about the black ministry. Where are we? Where do we need to go? What are their dreams? What are their hopes? And what is the next step that we can take to put us that much further down the road? And Noel will be involved in that. Bill Tell will, and Rayho and myself, and maybe one or two others. So pray for that get-together. I can't remember the exact dates on it. Sometime in the latter part of June.
June 27th, 28th.
Yeah. And we'll probably be meeting in Atlanta. Or Chicago, did we? Minneapolis.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a black training program this summer in Minneapolis, so that's where we decided. It was Atlanta first, then Chicago, then Minneapolis. That's the ministry with women. As you know, the gals will be meeting here next week, and I'm looking forward to that. I get to speak to them on Monday night. I think we need to step it up a bit in our work with gals. Helene put together a little map here that I think kind of tells the whole story. That's it. You know, we can kind of... you don't have one women's rep in the Southeast, Terry, is that right? Okay, well, that may be a little oversight then.
She is not
She's not? Okay. One in the Northeast, six in the Midwest, two down here. And this is kind of the new region, only they drew the line wrong. Montana doesn't get to go with the Pacific region. And there's three there. For a total of 12 in the U.S. right now, 12 women reps and 20... women contact staff. And I think we have 11 women reps overseas, Americans. Is that right? 11 women reps overseas. Is that right, Jody?
Donald's over there.
Donald? So that means if that's right, then we have a total of 23 American women reps, half here in the States and half overseas. I think that's right. I will be meeting part of the day, a week from today, with these 12 gals who will be here. And one of the things that we will be talking about is what is the next step? What can we do to further the gals' ministry? And I think there are some things we can do and that we need to do. For three things, I think we need to make sure that these gals feel loved. Secondly, that they feel needed. And thirdly, that they feel appreciated. And I think probably we need to work a little harder at that. For instance, I think it speaks volumes to the gals when we have a giant big conference in a region or a whole state or several states or something. And the only gal that's on the platform is there to sing. There are no workshops led by women. There's nobody on the planning committee that is a female. I think that says things to gals. I think it says the wrong things. But I just personally feel we've got some things that we can do that are not all that difficult to do that will just put us that much further down the road in reaching women here in the United States. And one of the things that I'm going to speak on Monday night is Matthew 28:18-20. And I am a firm believer that that is for women as well as men. I don't believe that the Great Commission was given in any way, shape, or form exclusively to men. Now, if we believe that, then we better, in some respects, where we are not doing it, start acting like we believe it. And I think a word to the wise is sufficient, and I've said enough about that. Third one is laymen. It's very obvious that we need to continue to define and clarify our community ministry. And I am I'm excited about this, though. I think that we are making some progress here, and I'm looking forward to next October to the community staff conference, and we're going to be talking about some of these things and approaching that in much the same way that we approach the military staff conference, and just getting that bunch of guys together and gals. There will be some women there too, not enough, but some, to interact on what are the practical outworkings of working among lay people. I think what is happening in the 2-7 ministry is a mere beginning. I think that the Lord, in a very unique way, led Ortley and that gang up in Denver to put together a packaged approach to making disciples in predominantly a church context that has the potential of literally influencing the evangelical church in America today. I think it has that potential. Whether we're willing to really push it that far and ride with it and make it work is another thing. I hope we are. And as some of you know, we've asked Bob Stevens to be our national coordinator for the 2-7 series. The guys feel that we need that kind of interaction and discussion among themselves. And Bob and Doris have prayed about it, and they have accepted this assignment. And so they'll be moving into that very heavily this summer. How you doing? Huh? Want to stand up a minute? Yeah, I want you to stand up. How about opening a few windows? Okay, you ready to go? Another concern or need that I see is resolving some of our needs here at headquarters and at Glen Eyrie, such as there are certain key personnel slots that we need to fill. I feel that we need to continually work at this matter of a more effective ministry to our staff, both here on the Glen as well, and particularly, I should say, the crew over at headquarters. I think we need to be a little more creative and imaginative than we have been in the past and develop some new uses for Glen Eyrie. We've got this gorgeous spot, and I don't feel that we're utilizing it to its max by any manner of means. I'd like to, sixth thing, I don't know how many you've got listed there, but I've got, this is six, I got subpoints under all these. New and broad sources of financial income. There are just some initiatives that I don't feel we can take simply because we don't have the money. And therefore, we're in the process of talking about some of these things with Rod and John and others as to how we can develop whole new areas of financial income that we have not touched to this point. For instance, I think there are some promotional and PR initiatives that we could take to let people a little bit more on the inside of what the Navigators are doing. A movie that is really well done. The last one we did was called The Hard Way. Do you remember that one way back in the Dark Ages? That was the colossal flop of the Navigators. Looked upon by many in that respect, and others are still using it. So, you know, it's... But we need a movie. We need some brochures. We need some pamphlets. We need an annual report that's sharp and good and we can put into the hands of our constituency. But all that stuff costs money, and it's money we don't have right now. We're having a world leadership conference here at Glen Eyrie in 1980. And that baby's going to cost at least $100,000. And we'd like to figure out a way to pay for that whole thing without it costing any of the staff a cent from their budgets. Those are just a few things. But we're going to have to be a little innovative and creative and go after it. The money is there. I mean, evangelical Christian, it is there. And they want to give it. We just got to figure out ways to let them know that we have a need. The last thing that I've got on my list is to identify and develop our most potential leadership people and then do whatever we need to do to give them the training that we can to get them into the slots that they can fill and meet the needs that we have. And I think we're making a little progress there. So these are some of the things that are on my heart, some of the things I pray for regularly. I want you to know that I pray for you by name regularly, usually about once a week. And I was glad that Sandy topped off what he had to say this morning by his little emphasis on prayer. It's more than a little emphasis in his mind. It's really a big thing. And the Lord has impressed that very much upon my own heart at the outset of this year. And one of my goals for this year is to learn to pray. That may sound kind of strange. But also to learn as much as I can about prayer. And so I'm reading books and talking to people. And I don't know whether you find prayer difficult or not, but I do. I find that it's very hard, particularly intercessory prayer. I mean, to really get down and pray for people and for events and for God to move into situations and do something about them, boy, that's hard for me. I'm reluctant to tell you this because it sounds so... can we get rid of that? I don't want to... commit myself here. But at the first of the year, the Lord really impressed this upon me, and particularly in light of Jeremiah 33:3. Call unto me and I will answer you. I will answer you. I will. And show you great and mighty things which thou knowest not. Now, I have, over the years, developed the habit of the idea of 1 Thessalonians 5:17, pray without ceasing. Constantly turning my heart to the Lord in various situations during the day. But one of the hardest things for me to do in prayer is to really get down and pray. I mean, just concentrate on that and do nothing else. Not meditate, not wonder and go off into dream world and think about all the things I've got to do today and that. I mean, really praying. That is difficult for me to do. Realizing that,